Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Jess Phillips, and welcome back to Yours Sincerely. Now, most of you might know I'm an MP in Birmingham, but what you might not know is that I've always been a prolific letter writer and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Freddie McConnell is a writer and journalist. He identifies as a queer transgender man and describes himself as a solo dad by choice. Freddie shared his experience of pregnancy in the BIFA-nominated BBC documentary Seahorse, The Dad Who Gave Birth. Freddie is an LGBTQ+ community advocate who fights for the rights of trans people and their families. Today, I'm excited to talk to Freddie about the letters he would send to three people who mean the world to him. So, hello, Freddie. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
You've come from Deal?
I have, yeah, trendy Deal.
So, this podcast is all about letter writing. How old are you, Freddie?
I'm 36.
36, okay.
So, you're quite old.
You're on the right side of remembering that letters existed, other than from the bank or EE telling you about your mobile phone. I got really chuffed this week. I got like a handwritten letter that came through the post and I was really excited, but it was just an invoice that my husband had failed to pay the three times it had been sent to him on email.
Oh, man.
So they had written me a lovely handwritten note. I got really chuffed, but it was just money I owe the plumber.
That's a downer.
Yes, a real downer. Were you much of a letter writer?
I was. I really was, yeah. And postcards. And as I was looking for some stuff to sort of bring up and talk about, I found even sort of emails that my grandma had printed out that I'd sent to her.
Oh.
That really, you know, like, that are really long and like letters. So, yeah, all of it.
That's gone now, though, even. I remember when email first existed, when I was, I remember my mate Helen went to live in China, and I think that's the first email. She was a year older than me, she was 18. So when I was about 17, so you're talking 1998, like, we definitely used to email each other.
Yeah.
But we didn't just email like I email people now.
No,
it was like proper.
Yeah.
It was like proper big, like life stuff emails. And now if people send me those emails, I just delete them.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
And mine always start with like, oh, sorry, it's taken me so long to get to this. Because, you know, it was such a big thing that you kind of had to build up to. And
yeah.
I haven't bought any of those because they are incredibly cringe.
All letters written by your younger self.
As a teenager.
Teenagers
so
are twats.
Bad.
I mean, I feel confident in, as the mother of two, of saying that they feel like they know everything. They know precious little and their insights are unoriginal.
And they're even worse when they are teenagers and they say that teenagers are twats as if they're not also twat teenagers. This is that kind of thing I would do. I'm really not happy about having to revisit those today.
The only thing worse than embarrassment, I think, is secondary embarrassment.
Yeah.
They're both the same. And you're now got secondary embarrassment for your younger self.
Yeah,
it's the worst emotion ever. Cringing, like waking up, like going, in the middle of the night is the worst.
No, absolutely. But I mean, most of the things I've got are thankfully hidden away at the moment because we just moved. So I just couldn't find these things that I have. But I did. So my mum dug out a bunch of cards that I'd sent her. I bought one of them with me, actually.
Oh my God, look at this.
Pile.
You've got a treasure trove.
Well, what I've realised now, I don't know if this is a thing that everyone does, but we're real postcard writers in my family.
Well, we used to be.
So I made that for my mum. I think it's a Mother's Day thing.
This is very of its time. To describe to the listener,
It's a mixture. It's a collage. Mm. Collaging was very big.
It's like a ransom note, but with Eddie Redmayne on it.
It definitely has elements of I'm going to murder you. Yeah. It's definitely got, yes, a slight element of I don't want to be traceable.
Yeah.
It's...
And then the way I signed it, oh my God. I've crossed out the letter.
So explain it. It says happy birthday, lots of love.
Oh, it's a happy birthday, yeah.
And then it says, it's got a plaster.
It's got a plaster stuck inside it because, you know,
why not?
Random, hilarious teenager. So I've crossed out the letter because that's the first letter of my old name.
Okay,
but
right.
But it basically, oh my God. I don't know if I can... It's the
you can't even bear to
no,
say
No, can you
it.
Please, can you please?
It says like, something money.
Like I've called myself money.
Yeah. Like, oh. So like if I were to call myself J Money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was... What year was this?
I don't know. I mean, I was maybe like...
That is deeply...
15.
That is deeply embarrassing. Oh.
To be in my favour.
It's also, I want to say, it's written in what I believe is called glitter glue.
Yeah, very pleased with that.
Also, I feel that here... In fact, it is... What it's the background to this area is
no.
A foreign banknote.
Do you know what? That means that I was probably quite a bit older.
A lot of work has gone into this card to your mum. I hope she really appreciated it.
Yeah, she did. Well, I think it's like...
Well, she kept it.
She kept it. Well, she keeps everything of this kind. Like, yeah, because we're just a family of letter writers. But that was instead of drawing something. Because I think actually in her heart of hearts, she still wished that I drew her cards now and then and forever. Like, you know... Massive guilt trips. That probably felt like a bit of a cop-out.
I don't keep anything my children have made me. I mean, maybe I do. But maybe because I only keep the stuff that's of a high standard and I think I keep that out.
Oh, my God.
The amount of crap I used to think... Okay. I used to want them at primary school. I used to think, use your own bin. Why are you giving it to me to throw in my bin? This is a terrible...
Wow.
My children aren't terribly maladjusted.
Quite harsh.
No, your mom clearly loves you more than... I love
she kept
my
all my old baby clothes, which now my kids are wearing. So
lovely.
Amazing.
My husband's mum kept like just some choice toys, and it's so lovely that we have them because we have like a speak and spell.
Oh, amazing!
Do you know a speak and spell only has 60 words in it? I thought it had all the words, but it's just literally apple.
That is all the words when you're five.
Yeah, that's it. Apple, dog. We play with the speak and spell a lot. Well, so look, I can see that your family are keeping a treasure trove of written materials. This is better than anyone else has ever brought on here as well.
Oh, I'm glad.
Say.
There you go.
I mean, most people don't have quite such good literature.
The cringe is worth it.
So do you have like a letter of note at all? Like getting a job or something that you kept? We don't do that via letter anymore, though,
no,
do we?
No, I suppose getting my job at The Guardian, which was actually like a place on a trainee scheme, which was quite unusual at that time because all that was kind of ancient history, I suppose, in the sort of early 2010s.
Yeah.
I got a letter about that. That was pretty amazing, which I still have.
Oh.
I mean, you know, typed up, you know, not particularly. But with the old Guardian branding, which is quite sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was huge, getting that. I had sort of recently
life
started
changing.
My transition. Yeah, you know, years contract at The Guardian. I had no journalism qualifications. That was kind of the point of the scheme, was to bring in people that didn't have formal journalism training. And yeah, a year of training in-house. It was...
Amazing. Do they still do that?
No, sadly. I think it was meant to be a new thing that would go every year, but I think it happened for 1 year. It was just us, basically. Yeah. It was 10 of us that got brought in.
So I've asked you to think about three different people you'd want to write a letter to. So the first one is somebody who means the world to you. So who would that be?
Well, I've chosen to talk about my nan. And I just want to add a quick disclaimer that obviously I could have talked about my mum, but I feel like I've talked about her quite a lot publicly. And I hope she doesn't take offence. But
can
I love
just
you, mum.
Say, you know. I love everybody who doesn't pick their mother. Says this.
Has to.
People don't give a shit about their life partners, I've noticed. Everybody whose mother is still alive who doesn't pick their mother feels they need to have an explainer why they didn't pick their mother. So you're in good company.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your nan.
Yeah.
What's your nan's name?
She's still alive. Her name is Anne.
Nan, Anne.
Well, she's known as Nanny Anne to my kids. Just to differentiate her, because,
Great-grandma.
Nana, all these.
Yeah. My kids had two nans because they both wanted to be nan, and it was confusing. And their mum.
No one wants to be nan anymore.
You see, both my mum and my husband's mum wanted to be nan because it's the working class way of saying it.
Yeah.
But my mum was then worried that she would be fat nan because she was fat. She was really worried about how they were going to differentiate.
That's a good name, though.
Fat Nan, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Embrace it.
Fat Nan. Yeah. But they just called her Nanny Jane, so it didn't make any difference. So Nanny Anne. So what is it about Nanny Anne that you...
Oh, she's just an all-round legend. She's had a very interesting life and is now... I don't know, but you wouldn't know that about her to meet her. Mm. She's very sweet and loving and unassuming, never asks for anything, you know, which obviously makes you want to just do all the more for her and hang out with her. And she, yeah, she's just not in any kind of massive, obvious way, but because of her lack of judgment and her open-mindedness, has been consistently supportive to me through transitioning and my career and all sorts of things.
Like nowadays, people, I'm going to say our age, like we're the same age, even though I am 6 years older than you, and have adult children, and so feel ancient. But I was a child bride. The, like the generation above us, you sort of boomers, your baby boomers, there was, you know, the sort of liberation of the 1960s. And there's a sort of expectation, I think, certainly, of that generation being considerably better than previously. But in grandparents, I think that there is still, like, you know, this sort of expectation that people hide their lives from, because you only see them once a year and it's like, why upset Nan?
Yeah.
Just to see her. And actually, and what I'm thinking about in my head is just being gay, actually. Yeah. But it's, it's considerably harder to hide.
Transitioning.
That would have been. Yeah, it would have been trickier to hide. But I imagine there's grandparents across the country dealing with all sorts of modernity in their grandchildren that they are finding a struggle. My dad had to have my son explain to him what pansexual was, which was the funniest exchange I've ever heard in my entire life. He was like, I don't care, I just don't know what it is. He was like, you know, people do whatever they want, but I just don't know what it is. Can somebody just explain
it
to me?
Your dad must be like keeping up with things if he's like...
He's 18, my dad. He listens to the wireless a lot.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I don't think my nan is that engaged with things and isn't someone that I would necessarily have even massive heart-to-hearts with, or even... I remember feeling really bad, actually, because I didn't tell her that I was having a baby until quite late on. And this was kind of a watershed moment in our relationship, I suppose, even though it was very recent. And, like, you know, we've always been close. And I've always had trusted her not to be judgmental or scary in that kind of way. But being a trans man's one thing, but then, you know, having a baby is like, okay, you know, I was worried in general about people thinking...
Well, it's
about
a lot of moving parts, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, I was just terrified of it being basically like the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, and suddenly I would discover that actually everyone who was supporting me was sort of, you know, just tolerating me, and this would be... you know, these are all the kind of... I'm anxious, you know, that's
well, anxiety is irrational.
Yeah, exactly.
Based sometimes in... rationale.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
it
absolutely.
It has to be based in a great kernel of truth.
Absolutely. So I just was like, well, I'll tell her when I need to tell her, like everyone else. And when I did tell her, she was, you know, really happy. And we didn't, again, we didn't go into massive detail because, like, she's not particular. I don't want to portray her as, like, right on or, you know, she's... And this is just my family in general.
It's better that, though. Like,
Don't go into massive detail. And that's not because I'm worried that she's, you know, secretly a bigot at all. It's just like, we just don't. And that's just not how we do in our family. And it's very, you know, it's very English. It's very sort of middle class, blah, blah. But yes, she was actually more upset. She was just upset that I hadn't felt I could tell her. And that, to me, was like, oh, I hadn't realised that's how you would feel. I'm so sorry. And I will never do that again. And, I can share more with you than I thought I could. And she's just always been a very open-minded person. And so, and I think, you know, that hasn't changed with age. And actually, some people in my family are definitely not so open-minded and are more right-wing. And because she's not very loud and doesn't really speak up much, I maybe never realised that about her. But so it's not something... Yeah, it's just the way she is, and it hasn't changed with age. She's just who she is.
I have to say, I think light touch, non-judgment is much harder to say, but it's much more pleasant to be around.
Like, you know, she's always going to be there.
It's not performative. It's not, like, there is an element, I think, sometimes of, like, my granddad was a complete and utter sort of egalitarian warrior.
Right.
And so he would like be overly nice to anybody from a protected characteristic.
Oh, God.
To the point where, you know, I mean, the man was born in like 1910, so yeah. I'm going to cut him some slack.
Sure.
But he had to prove, like, he had to be like nice to people in the street. And it
right.
was just sort of like, aww. Leave them the fuck alone, granddad.
Like, yeah.
Whereas my nan, who was a, you know, a sort of freedom fighter her whole life, it was just sort of like, a you do you. I'm going to make a fuss. You do you and I'll love you nonetheless.
Yeah.
And I worry in modern society, it's all a bit performative. And actually we need a little bit of quiet, like, as long as you're happy, love. I think that's
absolutely.
The best.
I think my nan wouldn't even go that far. Like, she's just so sort of undemonstrative, which I think probably some people might find irritating even. But I just love it. She's just, you know, we just go and have a nice time. And also, she's done amazing things. She's, you know, amazing woman, amazing person. And yet, you hardly know she was there. And that's not a good thing. I wish she wasn't like that. I wish she was more bigging herself up because, of, you know, she could have basically played tennis at the national level, international level. She could have gone to Wimbledon. This is what I heard. Not from her, but someone I remember once. But it wasn't considered appropriate. So her dad was like, no, you're not doing that sort of thing. And she was like, okay. And then she went to Australia as a young woman with my grandpa, and they went and ran a sort of humongous sheep farm ranch thing before there was like helicopters and things to do that with. And then came back and was a piano teacher for years and just got on with stuff. And then, you know, and had difficult personal relationships, but kind of just, yeah, got through them unscathed. And actually, even though she's so unjudgmental, has faced quite a lot of judgment in her life, but would never hold that against anyone. No bitterness, no nothing. Like, she's just such a wonderful, warm, loving presence. And yeah, I haven't actually got it on me right now because it's broken, because it was quite old and worn down. But I usually wear a ring that used to be hers that she was given by her parents, which, yeah, is very important to me. And I feel weird not wearing it. But, yeah, I'm just glad I can do that. She's amazing. She's a matriarch in the best possible sense, and she wouldn't agree with that, and she would deny it.
Yeah. I think often the brilliant women often don't big themselves up. My nan used to think that if you bragged about yourself, that you would rise so high up that God would take you away. Like, literally, like, it was like a genuine sort of almost Victorian fear. I mean, she'd lost some of her kids and she felt that she'd lost them because she loved them too much and thought and praised them too much. And, like, you know, like this idea that you just sort of quietly get on with things. This is a generational thing where they don't even think that there's any point in saying it. But it's not even a thought process. It's just like, we are as we are, and that's, I'm just going to get through the day. And I really hope that I'm never going to be like that. I'm back with a massive show off. But both my nan and my mum had that just sort of like quiet resilience and not feeling like, if you said, oh, you've been through a lot, they'd be like, well, that's not everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, that. Everybody's got a cross to bear, love. And that is to be cherished.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how would you sign off a letter to your nan? Nanny Ann.
I would say, we're not very good at saying it to each other, but I love you so much, and me and the kids are so lucky to have you. Love, Freddie.
Aww.
Yeah, because she's, my kids love her as well, and she knits jumpers for them.
How many kids do you have? You
2. My second one is just like an angel baby who is so chill.
You see,
totally
the wrong way around, you see, because I had one that slept, and then I had one that literally is a fucking nightmare. So, I mean, if I'd had that one first, I'd have one.
I definitely went into number 2 being like, this is it. You know, even 2 as a single parent, that's mad, right? I don't enjoy the process of having the babies and being pregnant.
Because it's totally shit.
It's the worst. And, you know, as a trans man, it's particularly terrible in my experience. Although, actually, lots of trans men don't feel that way. But I just love being a full-time dad.
How many trans men are there who've had babies in this country? Is there even data on that?
Of course there isn't.
Oh, is there? I was going to say. I realised I'm stumbling into a conversation where literally nobody collects any data.
There could be. There could quite easily be. There is in Australia.
There's no fucking data on anything. The government routinely does not collect data on literally anything you would want it to collect data on. It's very annoying.
I mean, I'm going to say there are hundreds.
Okay.
But that's a mix of people who had babies before transitioning.
Even
someone like me wouldn't be counting the data, annoyingly, even though it'd be so easy to. Australia gathered this data by accident because of some quirk of their IT system. And in like a 3-year period, something like 208 trans men gave birth in Australia. So that's Australia, which is obviously smaller.
Small. Yeah.
Yeah, and a 3-year period fairly recently. So yeah, there's more, okay, more than you'd think.
More than you think. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But being pregnant is shit for everybody, in my view. Some people fucking love it, and I think they're lying.
I know. Well, yeah, they must be, right? Like,
it's horrendous.
Yeah. I tried to sort of just go with it the second time.
I never once got that feeling, you know? Like, I used to try really hard, put my hands on my tummy and do like that sort of American rom-com feeling that I was really happy and that we were really connected. But I just thought, you're a parasite.
I used to like the kicks because it's like, okay, this is why I'm doing this.
The kicks is fine until it goes alien.
Yeah.
And then it's just freaky. It's like literally like the whole body moving. That's so weird.
I find it kind of amazing. Yeah.
Well, of course it is amazing and it's totally magical. And for people who can't do it, you know, I understand that it's like quite hard when people like me are like, but like, I don't think, I genuinely don't think that had I not carried my, I not carried my children, I would still feel the same. I felt no connection with them in utero. And I know that that wouldn't make a difference
to
me.
No, for sure.
And if anything, really, I'd love them slightly more. They hadn't ruined my pelvic floor.
Yeah, yeah.
The second person I asked you to think about is somebody who's no longer with us. So who would that be?
Well, or who isn't in my life anymore.
Yeah, they don't have to be dead.
Right, sure. Okay, that's good. Yeah. This is a tricky, tricky one because I really debated about whether to even talk about this person because, I mean, I'm not going to identify them, but yeah, I just feel like I was totally a shit friend in some ways to this person, and it's a long time ago. And actually, she has reached out more recently, but like, you know, lives have moved on and she lives far away now. And there was such a big gap of not being in touch that, you know, she's definitely not really in my life in any meaningful way. But I'm glad that we have made contact and exchanged really sweet emails and, you know, yeah, so peace has been made. And I don't even know, actually, if this person knows that I feel this way or would
be
aware.
So she was your friend years ago.
Yeah, when we were teenagers.
When you were teenagers.
Yeah. So she's a trans woman, I'm a trans man. When we were friends, I was a teenage girl and she was a teenage boy.
Okay, how did your relationship pan out?
Well, we... I can't remember how we met, but I think we must have been drawn to each other because... of this thing. But we didn't know that we shared that at all. Because
did you even have the language for it back then?
No, did not have the language for it. Didn't I... neither of us identified as gay. Like, we didn't have the word queer. We both went to...
Well, it was a bad word.
Well...
Was it even then? I mean, it was when I was a kid.
No, it wasn't really even in use. Yeah, gay was a bad word.
Gay was the insult, right? You're right.
And I was often... what felt like accused of being a lesbian because I was very butch, you know, I was a tomboy, quote unquote. Yeah, and there were people who were like, it's such a weird thing to say, but like openly gay at my school, but were like relentlessly bullied and, you know, yeah, it was sort of a mark against them, I suppose. Yeah. And actually never really identified as openly gay, even though, you know, you kind of knew. Yeah, it's so awful. But yeah, so, but we went to different schools actually. And became friends because of music, I think. And my other friend was putting together a band. And this friend of mine, who I'm going to call Sarah, for the purposes of this, played bass. Yeah, I think we both played bass, actually. So I don't know how that worked in the band. But yeah, really bonded over music. We were just like desperately geeky and obsessed with music of various kinds. And that was how we identified ourselves, I suppose, and sort of connected. And, you know, as long as we had music, we could... sort of escape the bullies and escape ourselves. And yeah, it was all kind of about that to begin with. And then I remember had tried a bit too much of this like horrible hash that someone had bought to this party. And then Sarah turned up a bit later and I think could immediately tell that I was having a internal panic attack and no one else could. So she took me upstairs. I think the party was at my, I think my parents must've been away. This was at my house, not really just a small gathering of friends. But yeah, she took me upstairs and we sat down with our bass guitars, or maybe there was just one. And she basically taught me this really complicated piece of music by a bassist called Jaco Pastorius, who's like, yeah, sort of jazz bassist, who's legendary, whose music I can no longer stand. But yeah, and like the whole time, it didn't refer to the fact that I was clearly freaking out or that anything had been taken. And then I think we went to bed, and the next morning I could remember this whole thing. And again, I don't know if I've ever sort of told her how amazing that was, exactly what I needed. And without even having to say anything, you know, she kind of stepped up and guided me through like a bad trip, yeah. I suppose. And then at another point, she confided in me, actually, that she did feel there was something going on with her, and that she'd actually really like to go and buy some hair products and maybe some makeup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember this, I think this was at her parents' house, and I remember her parents being very conventional and mm-hmm. straight-laced, and never knew them properly because of that kind of barrier. They were just like parents. And so I think it took a lot for her to talk to me about that. And I guess, like, you know, again, there was something that where we trusted each other, we were good friends, and I guess, like, I was gender non-conforming, even though I didn't have any other language for it.
We didn't even have that.
She didn't use the word trans.
We didn't say the word gender.
We definitely didn't use the word gender non-conforming, but that's kind of what we were.
Well, gender stereotype non-conforming.
Yeah, absolutely. I often feel like that word is missing from the conversation when we're talking about gender. It's like, I mean, I've got trousers and short hair. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I look back and I think, well, it was easy for me because I was a masculine girl. I was a butch girl. And that's not something you get massive flack for. No. You know, I did get bullied for sure. And I remember once going to a fancy dress party with this friend and I went as John Lennon. And it was like, that was, you know, I really loved that.
I can see you as John
Lennon. And, you know, and I was like, I was secretly loving it in a way that people didn't know because this was all internal for me. But at the same time, you know, go to a party as a girl, as dressed as John Lennon, whatever, and no one's going to. But whereas my friend Sarah, who was not at the time Sarah, but who was a boy, couldn't do that. So, and there would have been such higher penalty to pay if she'd been honest about how she felt with anyone else. And, you know, and I would never. And we did that, and we went and bought some stuff. And I remember, you know, trying to be supportive, but not really knowing. Because, yeah, you know, my only conception of anything like that then, and hers as well, which I feel is so tragic now to think about, it was, you know, these horrific portrayals of what we would have probably termed, like, transvestites. Yeah, certainly, like, you know, or men, basically, who were probably mentally ill. Like, that's how we would have thought about them then. Mm-hmm. And that's how they were portrayed very openly. There was no trans male equivalent. So there was no...
No, you're right. I can't think of it.
That's how deep the kind of me not using that as also, an opportunity to sort of come out to him.
Became sort of sexualised. The idea, I mean, obviously...
Oh, 100%.
The idea of transvestites, and I actually, funnily enough, growing up, I knew some men who were completely straight, but transvestites.
Well, cross-dressing is an identity.
And they used to give me boots when they were finished. Just like the upside. But there were, like, on television, there were examples. That wasn't the same as...
No.
And also, I think that transvestite more, like, that you might see around and about in a scene, there was an element of it being sexualised.
Or comedic.
And if you're a kid, then that's...
Yeah, absolutely. It's... Well, they just—it's like a pantomime dame, or it's.
I've got no problem with it or anything.
Like, no, not at all.
But it's not the same. Yeah.
No, exactly. It's all flattened out.
And it's all comedic.
And you know, and even like the In Betweeners movie had like a transphobic joke at the end of it, and now we've still got Mrs. Brown's Boys. So this stuff still goes on, but just in terms of like, I didn't hear what my friend was saying and think, oh, that's like me, but the other way around, because there was just no. Cannot be what you cannot see. I know it's a cliche now, but like, it's just driven home to me how stark that reality was for me because, I didn't confide in my friend because I didn't know I could, basically. Yeah. So the thing I then really struggle with is that we had a bit of a falling out a while later, maybe a year later, and I found a diary of mine a few years ago where I wrote some really mean things about my friend, which obviously I've never told her about and had completely forgotten about, to be honest, and was absolutely disgusted with myself when I read it. But, you know, obviously also trying to have some grace for my younger self who didn't know better, basically. But, you know,
I tell you what, we need a whole lot more grace for young people who don't know better in modern times.
I'm just clearly a product of those times.
Of course you are.
And, yeah, it's...
like we all are, like, you know, we're all a product of the times that we came from.
Yeah.
And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, but yeah, try and have some grace. Don't judge yourself by your modern standards.
No, no, absolutely. It's just the kind of, it just hurts that I used, in a way, even though it was privately, I used that information that she'd shared with me to sort of discredit her in retrospect.
That's
and
what all teenagers
I
do.
I know. And in a way, I now
never
I'm saying
a
this.
Weakness as a teenager. That's what I say to my kids.
Yeah.
Don't tell him that it's pissing you off because he's just going to use it against you, you fool.
That's very true. Yeah. God, it's, and now that I'm even saying this, I'm like, am I just doing this for to sort of my own benefit for kind of absolution?
Oh, don't try and second guess it. You're all right.
Well, I
also suffer from anxiety. Don't worry, you're fine.
Well, there you go. But yeah, I mean, she was a great friend, and we went through, you know, there was all sorts of stuff.
Is she happy now?
I'm pretty sure she is. Like I said, we're not really in touch much, but yeah, she went on to do amazing things in her chosen field. And, you know, and then she came out and she transitioned. And, yeah, that would never have been on our radar back then, I don't think. Maybe it was on hers, but we never talked about that. And, you know, many years passed.
It's like a sort of, like, modern day, like, you know, like when people, like, fall in love and then don't see each other for 40 years.
Absolutely.
It's a bit like, you know, how you were both there. And you must have been drawn together, like, for that reason.
Yeah,
like,
for sure. Yeah, I think she was always just a bit more emotionally intelligent than me and a bit more...
Well, you really are bucking the gender stereotypes.
I know. So know this. Like, it's... Yeah.
God, that's the one thing we've got,
there
man.
There we go.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I just wish that I could have been there for her in the ways that she kind of was for me. And you know, to then learn that... She actually got in touch with me partly because she'd seen, I don't know, maybe the film that I made about having a baby, and obviously she transitioned, so she wanted to sort of let me know, like, oh, yeah, look, here we are. Isn't that amazing kind of thing? And, you know, it is absolutely amazing. And, yeah, I still count her as a friend, and maybe one day we'll go for a drink.
How would you sign up a letter to Sarah then?
Kind of what I've already said. So I said, I'm sorry I couldn't be the friend you needed when we were teenagers, when you had the courage to be so vulnerable with me. And thanks for being my queer role model before I even knew I needed one. Love, Freddie.
Aww.
There you go.
It's lovely, isn't it, really? I think it's like a sort of Shakespearean. There was a lot of...
a lot of backstabbing.
Well, also, there was a lot of people mistakenly being dressed up as somebody
else.
That's true.
If we'd been at the same school in school plays back then, absolutely been, like, you know, she could have been the flipping nun in Sound of Music. been something.
Almost no plot could move forward in Shakespeare without somebody mistaking somebody for being the other gender. That's, like, the whole thing. We'll be back for the final letter after a short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Break.
So the final letter I asked you to write was to somebody who has had an effect on your life but wouldn't know.
Yeah. This is... does everyone say this is the one they find the hardest? Like,
yeah, people do find this quite hard.
Yeah, I was really racking my brains.
A lot of people go for teachers because that's like, you know, like they see so many people they wouldn't know.
See, that's interesting. Yeah, I could have... I almost went for a teacher, but ultimately... I've got a complicated history with, like, academia and always feeling like I... was never living up to my potential. So I had a really had difficult relationships with teachers, even though some of them were supportive, some of them were really not supportive. Like I used to get accused of plagiarism because my English essays were sort of, you know, good. Too impressive. And yeah, and I'd written them at the last minute, so surely they couldn't be that good. But I was just good at having ideas and terrible at every other aspect of academia and studying. So I sort of, yeah, I just got through. And I'm sure that's a really common experience. And I since, you know, like everyone and their dog, have been diagnosed with ADHD. But when I do look back on my childhood and school career and university career, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. And I do think that the reason that was missed when I was little was because I was assigned female at birth and being raised as a girl. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. So, yeah, complicated history with teachers. So I didn't nominate a teacher, but I kind of... This is adjacent in a way, I suppose. I picked Hanya Yanagihara.
That's a big name.
Yeah, it is. Are you familiar with... So she wrote A Little Life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you read it?
I have.
No. I'm not going to recommend it straight out in case you're feeling very strong and like you just want to read an extremely traumatizing and difficult book, which when I read it, I did. That's exactly what I needed. And this is quite recently as well. So it kind of feels weird to pick this
person.
I'm
no stranger to terrible trauma.
Not even
personally, just other people's terrible trauma. Sure. Okay. It's literally my bread and butter.
Maybe this is up your street then. Yeah. I mean, I read it at a weird moment where I just needed sort of extreme catharsis, and yeah, it's kind of a difficult book to talk about because it's so extreme and about this person that has this horrific life, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I can identify with that, but I think probably what a lot of people find when they do read the book is that it has some truths in that have never been presented to you in such an honest and unflinching way. So, you know, not, you know, and it's a very uncomfortable read, but it showed me something about what literature can be, I suppose, and what, you know, what you can write about from a like a marginalised perspective or a very difficult perspective, and yet it's still considered like valid, and you're not going to be like mocked or discredited for like going there. And sometimes as a trans person, you cannot help but go there constantly with your life experiences,
yeah.
And you feel like you're too much all the time, and and that's kind of stopped me in the past doing some things creatively because I just felt like it's too much kind of thing. So basically, I just read this book quite recently and felt like it was the first time I'd ever read a book that kind of showed me what's possible and that showed me that actually some of the things that I've wanted to explore or do with my career or creatively, you know, like, hell, I could actually do that. Yeah. And, you know, so, like, thank you, Hanya Yanagihara, who I've never met, and, you know, I know who I am. But that's kind of, it felt like a bit of a watershed moment for me. And then on top of that, the reason I was talking about teachers and stuff is because this also relates back to, you know, getting this kind of late diagnosis of ADHD, basically spending my whole life having people say to me, you know, you're a born writer. Why haven't you written a book yet? Oh, you could write about that. And me, just that idea of having to sit down and write a book, making me feel physically sick and then feeling ashamed because I know I can't do it. People don't understand how my brain works. Like, you don't understand how difficult that would be for me. Now I've had this diagnosis and I'm on some medication that has completely transformed how I feel about that kind of thing. So also for the first time in my life, I feel like, do you know what? Maybe I could sit down and write a book. That idea no longer horrifies me. Like, I'm able to keep on top of things so much better now than I did before I learned this about myself.
How did you learn it about yourself?
I've not sort of explained this properly. I've talked about having this diagnosis, but and it's kind of cringe again because, you know, as a trans man, you're like, well, the last thing I want to be doing is jumping on another fucking bandwagon. Sorry.
you can swear, don't worry.
Here we are. Like, I guess I have ADHD as well. So, you know, it's tricky to talk about, but basically, I went for an autism assessment because, for various reasons, including the fact that, you know, there is a high prevalence of autism or autistic spectrum disorder amongst trans people.
Uh-huh.
So a couple of people thought, you know, said to me, like, maybe you should, it would be interesting. And I was like, yeah, I could see that, maybe, like. And so I went along for this thing. It was really, really bizarre. Like, the questions I was asked felt like they were aimed at a kind of stereotypical autism type person who maybe is like a 10-year-old boy. Like, one of the questions was, what does a person's face look like when they're happy? Like, what do they do with their face? And I was just like, what are you supposed to be able to tell from me from these questions? Anyway, so, you know, didn't get diagnosed with autism, which I'm not surprised, especially given that experience. But he kind of threw me this curveball at the end. He was like, but actually, I think you should go for an ADHD assessment. And I'd never, ever considered that before in my life.
What is that assessment like?
The assessment...
I feel like I should maybe go for one of those.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'm all up and down.
It is underdiagnosed. Like, so because they used to, I think, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but my understanding is that they used to think that ADHD kind of wore off when you grew up.
Oh, right.
So you know, obviously it's underdiagnosed in women and girls.
Yeah.
By extension, trans men and, you know, all sorts of people, non-binary people. So there's that. So it's not surprising in a way that there's lots of people now being diagnosed.
Because the presentation isn't naughty.
Yeah, exactly. So like all the things that I now can look back and be like, because I was assessed for dyslexia as a kid, mm-hmm. but I didn't have dyslexia. I was making careless mistakes because I had ADHD, mm-hmm. you know, but like no one thought about that back then. But now they recognise that it can persist into adulthood. That's why a lot of people are getting diagnosed.
Yeah, yeah. I just seen a real like uptick in it recently.
Course,
like, you know, amongst the population of my constituency, like lots of young children, like sort of much more so than even when my kids were little, and certainly didn't exist when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I've just noticed in and around just adults being identifying.
Yeah. As, I think they say it's...
Or being diagnosed, not just saying, I've got it,
Yeah, no, I think they think it should be about 8% of the population,
and in the UK,
it's sort of nowhere near that, so, like, yeah, it's just not surprising. And obviously stuff's going to come with that where there might be an overdiagnosis in some ways, but, you know, there's a Panorama piece coming out about it. It's tricky, but...
It is
for
tricky.
For me, it makes a lot of sense, you know, and... I think if it
has
an impact...
Medication is working.
Exactly. If it has an impact on your daily life, which for me as a freelancer and as a single parent, and actually all through my life for various reasons, including at university where I struggled so badly in ways that I could not talk about or describe to anyone, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. This is me and I'm so grateful because, yeah, now I can have an idea. I can, you know, read a book like that, suddenly have my own idea out of nowhere, which also has never happened before. But, and you know, I'm sure it'll be nowhere near as good as A Little Life. And it's not, you know, it's not at all similar, but it's just given me that permission, I suppose, to imagine a story that, you know, otherwise probably I would have felt like this is too much, that kind of thing. And then to be like, oh, and actually now that I'm kind of in a place where I feel able to apply myself to work more readily, I could actually fucking do it. But now I've said it out loud, obviously,
you've
I won't
do it.
Do it.
No, well, you've got to do it. No. You've got to do it.
I've committed the cardinal sin of making a public commitment to
I mean,
thing.
I've literally got a book contract that I'm currently not doing. So, you know, I've committed the cardinal sin of taking an advance.
Oh, yeah, that's the next bit. That's the...
and then spending it.
But that means you must have written a few thousand words to get that...
I mean, I've written lots of books. But,
of course you have. I did know that. There you go.
It'll get done.
Sure.
But
yeah.
Be careful what you commit to.
Yeah. Well, there you go. This is a brave new world for me. So, yeah.
Yeah. The impetus not to pay money back is definitely to rip the tiles up from my kitchen and try and resell.
But also, doing work that you've already been paid for is really hard.
I mean, whoever thought that was a good idea?
Terrifying.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
I need to, like, you know, your children are going to starve.
Yeah,
motivation.
Yeah.
That's what I need in order to do work.
God.
But it's funny that you say that you felt like you needed permission. Because I think that's quite gendered, though. I have to say, I think people are conditioned to feel like they need to be given permission, especially people who've been marginalised in some way.
Yeah.
Like, you have to wait till somebody can say, you should be able to do this. And with regard to the diagnosis of things, I think that it is tricky when I think about people who've suffered trauma and upset in their life. I think sometimes we need to deal with the upset and the trauma in their lives rather than, like, all women who've been raped get told that they have a borderline personality disorder.
Yeah,
literally.
Yeah. I've been hearing about, like, there's a guy I follow on Instagram, classic precursor to any meaningless anecdote, but who is autistic and a psychologist talking about how BPD is an incredibly gendered and stigmatized diagnosis.
Terrible.
That is often, almost, if not almost always, misapplied, which is really interesting. I don't know much about it, but yeah, absolutely.
In my experience, what I don't want is sort of ADHD diagnosis to become... It's a bit like we have mental health conversations all the time now, and we're all fine about talking about... You and I both said that we are medicated all throughout this conversation for some form of... it's a worrying fig leaf, in my view, to... Like, when everyone can talk about it, we stop focusing on the fact that services are total shit. And
I take anti-anxiety medication, but I'm not in therapy because I can't afford it, and there's no therapy on the NHS. It's like, that's not great. But I'm not going to stop taking the medication because it's great, and I'm really glad. That
oh, I love the
as
medication.
Well.
Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
I'm
not
there for quick fix.
No, yeah,
I am not anti. But I'm totally pro meds. But why I'm anti is the idea that giving people like the name of like you're depressed or you're like is
it's much better than it was when I was a kid, but what I'm worried of that it becomes a total fig leaf for policymakers to then just be like, isn't it great that we can all talk about this and have a, like an awareness of it?
Yeah.
It's like, well, awareness is great until, you know, well, you've got a kid with suicide ideation and you're waiting 2.5 years for an assessment.
And you're talking, you know, as a trans person, I'm well aware that awareness is a, what is the word, double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And a fig leaf, and absolutely, you know, we don't want awareness. We don't want visibility.
Just want
we
your want fucking healthcare. Life. And yeah, we just want to crack lives. On.
Absolutely, we want to have, be able to have families. And but just a quick one, interesting what you say about, you know, the permission. Mm. I guess what I meant is more, not that I needed permission for me. It was just really about seeing a writer of any kind just go to some really dark, weird places. So, like, say that you can do that without, and that's like, yeah, a legitimate sort of creative pursuit. But yeah, in terms of like, I mean, I clearly don't have any problem putting my own voice out there. So yeah, I don't think I needed permission, but I was just like, oh, but I can be really dark and weird as well. Cool, let's try that.
Yeah,
let's try that instead.
Yeah. Sometimes I would like to be really twisted. I'm not sure I've got permission for that yet. One day. When I'm no longer an elected official, I think, maybe.
Yeah. Save it for that. Because then you can really go and
totally
be like,
twisted.
Oh my God, is she okay?
Yeah. That's what I want people to be like. Someone needs to do an intervention.
Yeah.
So how would you sign off your letter?
Oh, okay. So this one was... Thank you for inspiring this foolhardy promise to my future self. Don't worry, the pressure is all on me. Yours sincerely, Freddie.
Well, Freddie, it has been a total pleasure to chat with you.
Likewise.
It's always nice to chat. Thank you for your honesty and your lovely... I feel like I want to hang out with your nanny Anne.
Yeah.
She seems
down.
Like, yeah, come down to Kent.
Trendy Deal. Yeah.
Trendy Deal. I have literally never been to Trendy Deal.
Oh, you will eventually. Someone will arrange a weekend.
And has it got, like, you know, man buns is what I'm expecting of anywhere that's trendy.
Man buns. Lots of small chihuahua dogs. Small dogs.
Funnily enough, my friend went there recently and they said, the dogs as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I mean, I have some gay friends that moved down in that classic way and apparently only realised what Deal was like. And it's, you know, very gay, very sort of welcoming, mixed town. But they looked out the window and was like, God, there's a lot of small dogs on the seafront. And then the penny drops. It's like, oh, yes, we may not be the only gays in the village.
I live has, I don't know who's collected this data, but where I live in Birmingham has one of the highest populations of lesbians. And my husband is always like, you could tell because we have 3 different cat clubs.
Wow. I've never even heard of a cat club. That's amazing.
3 different cat-related clubs.
There you go.
He's like that. That should have been the clue.
Always look at the animals.
Animals.
Yeah.
The stereotyped animals. We'll probably be cancelled for saying all of this, but we'll
absolutely.
Be fine.
Absolutely.
Who cares?
We can point to the data.
Yeah.
It's there.
The data is there. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you click the follow button now on the app where you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod, and I'll be back next week with a brand new episode. This has been an Audio Always original.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. acast.com.